Those of you who may be wondering, I did not run out of West Virginia University shirts. I just got too warm to wear them. That's okay. We've got a day. We got a Marshall fan here tonight. So. One day, when one of my grandchildren was probably 3 years old, she came walking into the living room, and I was watching the news on TV. And she had a spoon in one hand and a cup of pudding in her other hand. And she walked over to me. She said, "Pappy, let's be partners." And I said, "Well, that sounds good. How are we going to do this?" And she said, "You spoon, I'll eat." I've had a lot of deals like that with her through the years. She'll tell you she's got me wrapped around her little finger, and she's probably right. But that's kind of what preachers do at gospel meetings. They spoon and the congregation feeds. And I hope that by the time our time together has passed, that you will feel a little stronger in your faith, you'll feel a little closer to God, you'll have a little more appreciation for the Lord, and you'll be that much more thankful and then some for all that he's done and is doing for us. I want to talk to you tonight about the fact that there's some trust involved in taking a long trip. If you're getting ready to take a long trip, there's any number of things you might do to prepare to go on that trip in order to be able to have a trustworthy car or the different things you need to be safe and make it okay. For instance, you might open an AARP account if you don't have it. I think they can get you some kind of insurance to help you along the way if you're traveling. We used AAA a few times through the years. One time when we went on our 40th anniversary trip, went up to Niagara Falls. How can you forget Niagara Falls? But anyway, had a good time, got to see a lot of beautiful landscape, but we prepared for the trip. We went through AAA, got a card issued to us that would help us a little bit with the cost or the problems if something did happen to go wrong. Had it gone over by a good mechanic friend of ours who we knew would be proficient in his work and very honest, and he was. He gave our car a good tune-up. I don't think it needed another one for 3 years, Kevin. I'm not sure about it, but at any rate, we tried to do some things to make the trip better. And in doing things to make the trip better, you have to get your machine to where you can trust it as much as possible. It's really not that much different with faith. As we travel through this world heading for home, faith is a major part of what we work with. In fact, you could say that belief and faith and hope are three parts of the foundation of what the church and Christianity is all about. We're told in Hebrews 11 and verse 6 that without faith it is impossible to please God. That ought to make your ears perk up a little bit. That's an important statement. It's talking about something you cannot do without God. It's talking about what we need to do in order to ensure that God is on the trip with us. The first part of the 11th chapter of Hebrews talks about faith being the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. The word substance here is translated from a Greek word that means to stand under. It is the imagery of building a solid foundation under whatever you're going to set the house or building your building on. Faith is what stands under our belief and commitment to God. The substance of things hoped for, though, is no more important than our faith being the evidence of things not seen. I've never looked at the face of God. Someday I will, but I haven't yet. You haven't either. We have to take a lot of things that God tells us on faith before we get ready to start our trip. We have to just realize we need to make sure the trip's going to go as safely as possible. And faith is our evidence of things not seen, that God has put everything that we need at our disposal to finish this trip and end up in heaven. We must, according to Hebrews 11 and verse 6, believe that He is. That's where it starts, to believe that God is. Christianity has fallen on hard times in the last few years. Not just have we lost a lot of members to death or apostasy, but we're also struggling to teach and keep the ones we have. The key to doing that, the scriptures imply, time after time after time, are the fact that we have to believe that God is. We have to have a solid foundational faith that will help us to be everything God wants us to be. You may remember hearing this passage and quoting through the years, but it talks a little bit about the fool hath said in his heart that there is no God. I'm going to talk with you for just a couple of minutes about that passage from Psalm 14. The fool here is not an idiot. He's not mentally challenged. He's not poorly educated, necessarily. The fool here is someone who has rejected God. It's someone who does not want God as a part of his or her life. And so it makes them more comfortable, those who are devoted to evil, to just simply say in their heart, there is no God. You don't have to be an idiot to be a fool. But you do have to accept the fact that if you're rejecting God in your life, you're anything but innocent. You are anything but traveling the right path. We've got to know that we can't just say there is no God and God disappear. If you would read the first chapter of Romans and just spend a little bit of time thinking it through from the beginning to the end, you'd be surprised at all that God says through the inspired tongue in that little section of Romans chapter 1 about getting rid of God in our lives. One of the things that's driven home in Romans chapter 1 is the fact that we will be abandoned by God if we choose to abandon God. If you're getting ready to go on a long trip, like we are on a long trip toward heaven, toward home, we got to make sure we're working with good equipment. We've got to make sure things are as okay as they can possibly be. So he says, believe that he is, believe that he rewards, for Hebrews 11 and verse 6 continues. Don't be ashamed. Don't be embarrassed, and don't be arrogant, but that God shares gifts with you, that he rewards you for serving him and being one of his followers. That's really what hope is all about. It's being able to collect the reward that God has waiting for each of his people. And you have to allow that belief to blossom into diligence in seeking him. God's not hard to find unless you're trying to hide from him. Even then, he knows where you are. I may not know where you are. I don't know what you're doing. I don't know what your life is like at this point in time. But God does. And he's willing to bless us if we are willing to search for him. He will reward those who seek after or for him. Paul addressed it a little further in 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 12. He He's writing to Timothy about his past and how some of the mistakes he made and some of the things that he found hard probably to put in the past. But at any rate, in 2 Timothy 1 and verse 12, he wrote, "For which cause I am also suffering these things, nevertheless I am not ashamed. For I know whom I have believed, and I am persuaded that he is able to keep that which I've committed unto him against that day." Paul says, I'm not ashamed of God. I'm not embarrassed to belong to God. I believe that he is. Therefore, he is a factor in my life. I do believe that he rewards, and that it's a reward that will be worth anything it costs us to get there to receive it. And I'm not ashamed because I know he's going to bless us in the long run. Allow him to blossom into diligence in seeking God, and you'll be surprised all you're capable of in the kingdom. Think about trust for a few minutes. Trust built an ark. I'm told that that ark is almost unbelievably big, that the way it's described doesn't do it justice if you get to see it. I've seen facsimiles of it before, but it was a tremendous craft. And God made sure that it would make the trip that Noah had to take. But the biggest thing he had to do in preparation is to double check his trust in God. Noah, are you up to the task? Are you ready to go where God has told you to go, no matter what? When God could see yes in Noah's voice and his eyes, he knew it wouldn't be long till there'd be an ark built. Trust built an ark. Trust sacrificed an animal. That sounds gruesome to you and to me, but back in those days, that was the way you worshiped God primarily. You brought gifts to him at the altar if possible, and you made sure that that creature was perfect, flawless, as good as a sheep or something like that gets to be. Trust sacrificed an animal. When Cain offered something from his garden, God rejected it because God didn't tell him to get something from his garden. I have a feeling that there was more to that conversation than we've ever been let in on, but I will tell you that Hebrews, Romans chapter 10 and verse 7. Don't get old. I'll just have to tell you the words pretty much. I can't remember the text. Faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. Abel knew what to offer. Abel pleased God with his offering, even while Cain didn't either. How? By doing what God told him to do. By making the sacrifice God told him to make. There was trust in Abel's heart. He knew that God would not let him down. But trust not only built an ark or sacrificed an animal, trust also traveled with God. As long as Israel followed Moses' leadership and did the things that God told them to do along the 40 years of wandering in the wilderness before they inherited the promised land, the Exodus, we call it, the people trusted God. Now, they wavered from time to time. We used to say that there was an Egypt party in the group of Israelites that left Egypt to go back to Canaan. what we meant by an Egypt party was every time something went wrong, and you can go back and read Exodus and check me up on this, almost everything that ever went wrong, there was a group of Egyptians or a group of Israelites who said, let's go back to Egypt. I am so sick and tired of this manna. I don't want this bitter water. Instead of complaining, they needed to be trusting, because the time was going to come when they had no alternative. Trust defeated Canaan. All of those little city-states fell one after another after another as Joshua led Israel in and throughout the land of promise, destroying those enemies of God, trying to make sure there would be no one left in Canaan that could in some way or another debase their religious belief or shatter their trust in God. They defeated Canaan. When they became convinced that God could do what he said he would do, he did what God told him to do. Trust rejected Pharaoh's palace. I don't know much about sheep. The only thing I know, I guess I know two things about sheep. I know one of them is they stink. And the other one is, And the other thing I know about sheep is they were offered as sacrifices in the Old Testament. And how that stink I smelled ever came to smell like sweet incense to God is to me almost a miracle in and of itself. But when they became convinced of what God could do, trust made a difference. Moses could have chosen to stay at Pharaoh's. He could have remained in Egypt. He was not going to be bound to stay there, but he could have stayed. He could have chosen the perfumed courts of Pharaoh. But instead, he chose the bleeding of Israel's stinking sheep. Why? They had seen enough in the plagues. They had been taught enough in the Passover meal to trust God and to go with Israel rather than stay with Egypt. Trust even transitioned or transformed a prostitute. Her name's Rahab. We know the name well. We know the story fairly well. Just another person who, when they got close enough to know God a little better, trusted him a little more, and that process would continue until that trust could be complete and the journey could be set out upon and they make it there safely. Because they trust God. And in trusting God, God fulfills his promises to them. In Psalm 125 and verse 1, we read, they that trust in the Lord shall be as Mount Zion, which cannot be moved, but abideth forever. You trust God, and your faith will be as strong as a mountain. What God asks you to do will become easier and easier because your faith is growing stronger and stronger. In Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 18, trust in the Lord with all thine heart and lean not on your own understanding. That's trusting God almost by definition. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Don't give yourself half to him. Don't give yourself 70% to him. Don't give 99% to him. You trust him with everything you've got. And the time will come when you will be glad that you made that sacrifice. You'll be glad that you came to a point in trusting God that nothing could shake your faith or keep you from listening to what God told you to do. In 2 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 9, Paul says, behold, we had the sentence of death in ourselves that we should not trust in ourselves, but in God which raiseth the dead. When we pitch our own tunes, when we toot our own horns, we usually get the pitch too high. We start thinking of what I've done, what I've accomplished, what I've been able to do. We almost, if we're not careful, get to sound like that Pharisee that went up to the temple with the publican and says, I'm glad I'm not a murderer, I'm glad I'm not this, I'm glad I'm not that. God, you ought to be proud to have me. That's not how it works. The only reason we got Jesus to do what he did on Calvary seems to be described in 2 Corinthians 1 and verse 9 as the only way it could happen. That we could not do anything remotely close to the forgiving of our own sins. We had to trust in God with that. And Jesus is the one that was raised from the dead to show us that God can do it for us too. And he will. In John 14 and verse 1 and following, there's a conversation between Paul and Jesus, or not Paul, but between the apostles and Jesus. And in that conversation, a lot of things are said, but what catches me first is that at the very beginning of John 14, he says something along this line. He said, trust God. Trust God. Jesus would cry out to you and to me as we're preparing to make this trip and say, trust me. Now, you won't find those two words together in the scriptures, I doubt it. But you will know that that theory and that sense of meaning goes along with every Christian's commitment to God. Jesus says, you believed in God. You trusted God. Now believe in me. Now believe in me. If you could sum that whole conversation up, it would be Jesus looking at his disciples, worried because they sense he's going to be leaving them, and could say to them as simply and plainly as I can say it to you, trust me. Calvary was Jesus being trusted. The resurrection was God being trusted. We might have hard times. We might go through difficult situations. But we can trust God when it comes to the second coming. He's coming back. Maybe tonight, maybe tomorrow, maybe a year from now, maybe another 2,000 or more years from now. I don't know that. You don't know that. Only God in heaven knows that. But I do know it's going to happen. I do know that we can trust Jesus when he says, if I go to prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself. In Matthew chapter 11, verses 28 through 30, Jesus has another conversation with a group of disciples who seem to be kind of weakening. Their spirituality seems to be waning almost right in front of Jesus' eyes. Things just seem to be going wrong, and it's not exactly everything they thought it would be. And you know what Jesus said? He said, come unto me, all ye that labor and are ever, and I will give you rest. For my heart earth. I'll go on to the next one. I worry about this, by the way. I want to ask just a personal note. I want to ask you to pray for me that my mind will do a little better. I really love to preach, and I dread the day when I won't be able to do it. but if you're praying for me, I feel I have a much better chance to keep going with it. But in Matthew 11, Jesus said, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. For I am meek and lowly in heart, and you will find rest unto your souls. You know what two words that translates to me? Trust me. Trust me. In Luke chapter 23, verse 43, Jesus is hanging on the cross. It's fairly early in the crucifixion procedure he's going through. He's listened to people among the Jews, and especially leaders among the Jews, to make fun of him and mock him and you know, spit on him, hit him, and say, who hit you? You're the Son of God. Can you make these things go away? Will you come down off the cross and prove to us? It was quite a time. But in Luke 23, verse 43, one of the would-be mockers quit mocking. He turned to Jesus and asked a simple request of him. Can I be with you in glory? You know what Jesus said? In two words, Jesus said, trust me. I'll be there for you. Where I'm going today, you can follow with me and be a part of it. Trust me. In Philippians chapter 4 and verse 6, we're reminded of the vast need for us to pray. And he promises, Paul does in that letter, when he's talking to us about praying, he promises us that if we pray, God will give us peace. Now, who doesn't want a little more peace? We've all fretted a little bit with what's going on in the Middle East and to a lesser degree right now in Ukraine. We long for peace, arms to be laid aside, and people to get along again so the gospel can be freely taught and we can live life the way it should be lived, without fear and without trepidation. Pray. Paul says, pray and you will find peace. He adds that Jesus will guard your soul, your heart and mind. I hope you believe that. Because what it's saying is, trust me. It's saying it from heaven and God's throne. It's saying it from Paul in front of a group of disciples or apostles and Christian men and women. Trust me. In Acts 27, Paul is on a ship and he finds out from God that the ship's going to wreck, that it's not going to make it safely. And Paul comes up out of the hold of the ship, and he gets to talking with powers to be, and they decide they need to get off the ship while there's still time to get off the ship and try to get the rowboats and get to shore safely. Paul says, no. I had a vision last night. One sent from God told me that they knew what was going on, what was facing them. But not to worry about it, as long as every one of them stayed in the boat, every one of them would survive. That's a lot. But it's almost like Paul looked into the eyes of the captain of the ship and said, trust me. Paul said it this way, I believe God that it shall do as he promised. And then there's the resurrection account in John chapter 11 of Lazarus dying and his sisters Mary and Martha being rightfully upset. They send word for Jesus to come to them. Jesus decides not to go as quickly as they called. He waited. And after waiting a period of time, he got the disciples together to go. By the way, Thomas said, if I don't see these, I won't believe. But Thomas was allowed to see them. And when Jesus finally got to Bethany, Martha met him first. Martha was the more strong-willed of these two sisters. Of course, I've had four sisters, and I never knew one of them that wasn't a little strong-willed, but that's probably because my favorite toy growing up was throwing Spunky through the wall in the plasterboard on the hallway of our house. But Dad didn't particularly find that entertaining. But Martha came to him, and I don't know what tone of voice she had, but I do know this. It was pretty much the equivalent of, Lord, where have you been? If you would have been here, if you would have come when I sent for you, my brother would not have died. And Jesus said, do you believe in the resurrection at the last day? She said, yes, you know I believe. He said, well, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believes in me shall never die. What Jesus was saying to Martha was, you got to trust me on this. You've got to let me do what I need to do in order for us to reach home. It was just a little bit later that Mary came. Now, Mary was a little more soft-hearted. She was a little more gentle and didn't seem to be a worrywart like so many people are. And she comes up to him, and in so many words, she says, where have you been? And it's almost like they rehearsed it, you know. Where have you been? And if you would have been here, my brother would not have died. And Jesus pretty well repeats what he repeated to Martha. I am the resurrection and life. I love my Bible, but my Bible won't save me. Only my obedience to God will save me. Only my trust in God can save me. I believe that he is. That he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek after him. And of course, you know the story ends with Lazarus coming forth from the grave. The significance of all of this is that in many ways you can summarize Christianity with two simple words. Trust me. Trust me. I believe in you. I believe you'll take care of me. I trust you. I trust you with my life. I trust you with my soul. I trust you every day we live on this earth. And I trust God to be rewarders of those of us who make the trip, because we trusted him day by day throughout the course of our lives. If you're here this evening, but you have yet to be baptized, I don't know what's keeping you from it. It's beyond my capability to know. But what I do know is, as long as you stay in the condition you're in right now and have yet to be baptized for the remission of sins, you very well could lose your soul. What we've asked you in this lesson, what we're going to ask you in the song we're about to sing is, do you trust Jesus? Do you trust him enough to keep every promise he ever made and us never have to doubt it? That can be yours. That trust, that sense of loyalty. But you don't get it unless you come and ask for it. We can't bring you to the front of the building kicking and screaming, but we can sing a song that is directly devised and developed to touch your heart and get you to make your way to the front of the building, confess your faith in Jesus as God's Son, and be buried with him in baptism for the remission of your sins. If you need to do that, trust him enough to step out and do it tonight while we stand and while we sing.